is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good yawning this morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. We're still in July, Independence Month, and I want to have with people who are a part of the national fabric, part of how this country works. In particular, I want to talk to advocates and activists and doers, people who are doing things about what they do and how it builds the country, how it supports our individual and collective development. And today we will be talking with Sam Duncan from ReEarth in a minute. I got to get through a little news first. So, producer, you could check in the Zoom room. I know Sam is coming into the Zoom room this morning. We got a little bit of news to touch after the long holiday weekend, and I'm going to push through that very, very quickly. And so the first thing I want to say is that there is a sort of temporary road closure. Two lanes reduced to one lane right in front of CI on Shirley Street. It's the U.S. Embassy work right there. And I just want to say, we sort of expect the U.S. Embassy to set the standard in the country. It's kind of why some of us, anyway. So there's a road closure there. Be careful. You will not see the sign for the road closure until you are 30 feet past the actual closure. The sign is on the barricade immediately next to the roadworks, right? The works. Their fence is extended into the road. Somebody, please, at the Ministry of Works, ensure that all construction companies are aware of what the local standards are for construction zones and road works and road closures. For the love of God, it is. I can no longer stand by while people proclaim that they are professionals in this country. None of us can continue to do it. We can no longer stand by and clap and cheer and pretend like we are performing at an international standard. If we continue to refuse to follow those standards. And this is the best part. It's always the things that have to do with the average citizen, right? With the regular person. It's always those parts of the process that are dysfunctional or non-existent. We got a notice from the Village Road Construction Company, whatever, the roadworks company, that Shirley Street would be reduced to one lane starting July 12th. The notice didn't say the extent of the lane closure. They didn't indicate a starting point or a close point, nor the notice that I saw. In fact, what we see today, July 13th, and we saw yesterday, July 12th, well, already existed before the notice came out. At some point, The people getting the big bucks, the people making the big money, the people receiving the honor and the prestige of doing the big things, y'all actually have to do those things. You actually have to do those things. So I see the story in the paper, I think both papers, Bahamian man who visited West Africa has malaria, government says. That's the headline in the Tribune, I mean in the Guardian this morning. I want to read this brief excerpt. I was reading the paper today, and it says, it's from the Tribune article. The person was back and forth to the doctor for some time, not feeling well, and with the travel history, a decision was made, and the test confirmed he was positive. Let me ask y'all something. In the age of COVID, right? In the age of COVID, isn't the second question you ask, what is your travel history? How many back and forths occurred before somebody asked about travel history? See, my grandmother, I was about to say my government, because that's what caused me to govern myself, is not wanting to be an embarrassment to the members of my family, to all, but particularly those that have set a mark in this country. But my grandmother used to say, when you tired of doing the people way, get off the people job. You in the Bahamas, you in a free-to-quit state. You could quit at any time. Yeah? We could see that in the political class. You could quit at any time and probably get the same amount of money and benefits and perks that you would have attained if you were actually doing the job. So I want to beg y'all, if y'all don't want to do the job, go home. Got a quick news story. It's not a news story. It's only my personal news. BC outages continue. It turns out that a number of areas were off yesterday for an undetermined amount of time. So I have a couple of questions. Does Frankie Wilson have the generators ready or what? This round, let there be no slapping up. Y'all already played smoke and mirrors to the point that no newsroom in the country knew exactly what was going on with all of those contracts. We're going to get a contract to build a facility to house the generators. We're going to get a contract to rent generators, to buy generators. Nobody knew what was going on. But now we know that Frankie Wilson got generators to rent us, eh? And he's preparing himself to go into the solar industry and buy the solar industry to be the main proprietor of energy being generated by the company. So I got some questions. Has any real work taken place on the transmission and distribution systems? Like, has anybody trimmed anything? Has anybody bought a tree trimming vehicle, cherry pickers? Are there any courses at BTVI preparing subcontractors and private contractors to work at the standard required for the leading energy provider in the country? Y'all take the VAT off of clippers yet? Weed whackers? You bought any mulches yet? See, because we got another issue here. The government wants to use my taxpayer money to pay for their mistakes and breaches, but they don't want to tell me, the taxpayer, how much of my money is being spent. This is happening at BEC right now. As I learned, the government, they think they settled with Osborne and others who were suing. And it seems to me that we're not going to know how much they were paid, and we're not going to know exactly why the government felt the need to settle. We're not going to know any of that as we sit in the dark wondering when our power is going to come back on. Why won't BPL communicate with its customers? Why can't they post restoration estimates on their media platforms? Why aren't all communities, tied into their monitoring systems. That one was outrageous. I lost my head. That was an outrageous expectation. But will BEC and BPL ever be honest, transparent, or accountable to the Bahamian people? From boards to CEOs to ministers, nobody will tell us what is going wrong at the corporation or who is responsible for its continued failures. Nobody. Y'all wouldn't even make sure that there are sufficient surge protectors and generators in the country. You wouldn't even have a generator subsidy program, considering that you are the root cause of the energy crisis for 30 plus years. But it gets better. Did you know, dear callers, I want you to give me a blie because I got a guest coming in shortly. Quickly, did you know that BTC has a WhatsApp number that works as well as it does? Did you know that that WhatsApp number is managed by a separate company? Did you know that it could take that separate company service 4 days to 30 days to respond to your initial engagement? See, I use the word engagement carefully because the first prompt you get after you message them is choose one of these numbers to tell us what the problem is. That's it. Nobody talks to you. Nobody identifies himself. That's it. 4 to 6 days for a response from a WhatsApp helpline that is managed by a third party for BTC. And they don't even respond. And in the 4 days I waited, 3.5 days that I waited, I didn't even get a response. Because a response means you acknowledge what I initially said. They just started the whole process over again. 3.5. We are paying people for this. And it's not real time. It's just madness. Okay, I pause briefly. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Good morning, Mom.
Good morning. How you doing? Now, look, I got a guest in the Zoom room, so we got to keep the calls a little quick today.
Yeah. Miss, tell me something now. Uh-huh. Would you call a progressive a democratic socialist?
Listen, I'm trying to figure out why you keep insisting on using this language. The politicians that govern us, not only do they...
afraid of this language. Why be afraid? You know, we have London train politicians, right?
Yeah.
Call themselves progressive. And don't seem to want to believe that progressive is something different than it is.
They don't call themselves progressive. They allow us to assume that they're progressive.
Okay, we have a prime minister that goes to the University of the Bahamas and says that he believes in a livable wage and affordable housing. Do he realize that affordable housing is not affordable housing ownership?
Listen, it must have been opposite day on the day that he said that, because it should be certain to everybody by now that our government don't believe in those things.
No, if affordable housing isn't owning a house, it's being able to live in a house.
Yep, yep.
You know, being able to afford the rent.
Right.
You see, and you're talking about livable wage. Do you, the government, go legislate it?
Yep, as simple as that.
As simple as that.
Create regulations in the market and consumer protections to protect the consumer and not the corporation.
Man, I'm tired. I got a brother that live in London. He studied law, accounting. This man... Come on now. He got two pensions, one from the pride from a job and one from NHS.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So and this man is a progressive. You know, he's London trained.
Listen,
why people come from London and come and call themselves progressive and more conservative than the Republican
but
Party?
But not just
thank you.
Why would you come here and call yourself progressive, knowing that you can't progress anywhere and you don't have the political will?
They're rocking it. They've been calling themselves progressive, and they, you know, they taste like, okay, how could you bring a progressive?
Thank you.
Policies without a progressive talk? How?
Look, yeah, it's not even that. Thank you, caller. I gotta go. And what I'm trying to suggest is that progressiveness is not possible. We do not have the capacity to achieve it at this time. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
I've got all the days to talk to you and wait so long with you, pretty.
Good morning, Brayman.
You know, we people, the Bahamian people are tired of this nastiness that are going on in the country, you know. We need somebody decent to be in the House of Assembly to do the right thing for the Bahamian people. And most everybody would see they could milk the Bahamian people. They would do it in a diplomatic way. Now, all that money we be paying, and we was paying for electricity from way back then, okay? We should be owning anything that the electricity company needs, okay?
Yeah.
And people, what they're doing is looking over, seeing the problem, and what they're doing, putting themselves in the position to call themselves alleviating the problem, whereby our money supposed to be alleviating the problem. That's the reason why we put people there and get people to work in places as such. Those guys, those people got to quit jiving because it's nastiness what they are doing to the Bahamian people.
Thank you, Bremen.
Thank you.
Absolutely, and it's a question you got to get up every day and ask yourself, are you working the system or are you trying to make the system work? Everybody, because ultimately, if you get up and you go to work every day seeing the deficiencies in the system, seeing how the system loses or fails or continues to in dysfunction or becomes more dysfunctional while you continue to get the same benefit or compensation that you always get, you got to ask yourself, are you working the system or are you working to fix the system? And when you see a problem, your first thought shouldn't be, how can I go into that space and capitalize on it? It should be, how can I go into that space and fix it? Because I could see the problem. Now, this seems all kind of altruistic and errant, but you're more Christian than these people out here claiming to be Christian. I mean, it's sort of like that, right? But it's more important than that. We are wrecking the boat that we are on. We are wrecking the only boat that we have to navigate the seas. And some of us are wrecking it while we still on it. Some of us have one foot in the lifeboat, right? Some of us have one foot in the lifeboat while we, the other foot is in the main boat wrecking it. Some of us have one foot in the yacht. Some of us are in the yacht sending our minions over to wreck the boat. And some of us don't even realize that it's a boat that we're on that we're wrecking. There's another story. Caller, you on the clock very quickly. Good morning.
Hey,
how you doing?
I'll be very quickly.
Yeah, man.
First of all, I want you to ask Ann Duncan if she's going to run for chairmanship because, you know, Mr. Gary Gowen, and we need somebody like her to be a chairman. But my two questions is, if we're going to talk about Bitcoin and all of this, we need a reliable telecommunications service and reliable power with WBL. If those two things are not reliable, they can't work. You don't make no sense. You going on Bitcoin and monitoring your coins and on a trade market. If BTC, BTC went down last night, I was monitoring, and I lost, and the power went off for a couple of seconds. So that can't work.
No, it can't.
You're talking with two tongues.
Yeah, and that's and the best part is this. You're getting paid like it work. You
right. The chairman ain't know what he's doing with BPL. Move him. Because we cannot be, and then the BTC ain't know what he's doing, then move him. We must have reliable service 24 hours adequately and a backup plan.
Yeah. You are creating, not you, we are creating such a schizophrenic state.
Yes.
We are paying people for ideas that they know cannot be realized.
And they moved the last chairman who was doing so good. Now they appoint this one. This point, he don't know if he wants solar or if he wants a liquefied gas. We got to make up your mind what we want to keep us going.
Anyway, I only heard half of what you said just now.
For that Aaron Green.
Yeah, it is.
Have a good day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We even talk about the domes. We haven't even talked about the housing crisis and fiasco in Abaco and the rest of the country. But I want to talk about something quickly, and then I'm going to get to these texts, and then because I got a guest. It's an important conversation. There's a story I watched on Eyewitness News last night. A young man with intellectual disabilities is missing. The police put out a missing flyer, I think, The missing report initially went in on July 2nd. But the story last night was not about the man, the young man. It was about the police finding a decomposed body in Grand Bahama, in the vicinity of where the man with the intellectual disabilities who went missing lived, right? And so no identification has been made. Nobody has determined that the decomposed body found in the locked vehicle within 5 minutes on foot from the home of the missing man is the missing man. There's no determination has been made, right? But I have some questions to ask. What efforts were expended to locate a missing special needs person? Did they make a perimeter and sweep it with dogs? Did they use drones to survey possible sites where he may have been stuck or trapped? Because if they did, is it possible that they would have found this other body far sooner? Right? If they did, is it possible that this body of the decomposed body would have been found much sooner? And will the RBPF or the Ministry of National Security provide a report on the search efforts so far? I wanted to just mention that quickly because my question is there a protocol for locating missing persons? Is there a standard procedure? Perimeters, drones. So we got the drones. That takes me back to the light show. What was that light show? Was that all drones? When I watched the flamingo move its leg. Were those drones? Were those the drones? Were those private company drones? You know how the government could acquire land? Like we could just take your land and compensate you for it? Could you acquire those drones and actually start to use them in your crime strategy or an agricultural theft strategy or something? Could you do that? Could you use the drones and short spotter complementary to do that? Because people are getting paid to do things, and I wonder if those people realize that that's what they're getting paid to do. See, I even get to the COVID. Okay, I got 10:28, so here's what we're going to do. I got 2 minutes to do this, and we're going to do it. First text, LOL, Aaron, I can tell you've had it. You're invoking God now. I put in a correction. The international companies won't do this in the big USA. They'd have lights and barriers and orange diversion signs miles away. It's just when they come to anything buck up country, they get infected with Banana Republic disease. The tourists too. They be jaywalking like crazy and remarkably expect to live. Boy, I encountered that this morning. Thank you, text. Another text, Miss Green. I live in Pinewood. The current been off from 1 a.m. this morning. This text was sent at 10:14. Just sweat, heat, the mosquitoes setting up for their One Blood concert. I called the emergency line. They said they don't know what's wrong and don't know when it'll be fixed. Can we get Freeport power and light, please? Dear BCBPL, can y'all get on it? Please get on it. Another text, great show as usual. Whatever you was planning on saying about the U.S. Embassy, don't say it until I get my visa straight. I want to go to Walmart. Boy, look here, that's one of the most important texts you ever texted, texter. We must always be careful, wary, and alert. Always. Can't let my one little set of personal politics persuade or cause a problem for the rest of the country. Not everybody have to believe what I want to believe. And even I must learn to moderate myself, my anti-capitalist, anti-imperialist ways. Another text, great show as usual. I will tell you the end of the Shirley Road closure. It will be closed until the next election. Oh, wow. I can't read that one. Thank you, texter. You heard the music. Thank you, producer. We're going to go to a break. And when we come back from the break, a couple more news items and then into our guest. Stay tuned to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day.
how important collecting your money can be to the success of your business. Start your relationship with Fidelity today so that we can show you the many options available to you with our merchant services. From click and pay options online to merchant terminals and e-commerce options, we're here to help your business succeed. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fruit.com or visit any of our branches.
Is this thing on?
Listen up! Nassau's favorite Friday happy hour event is back! But this time, bigger and better than ever! Fassage, Star 106, and Margaritaville Downtown presents Fish Fry Fridays!
One, two, three, go!
Friday, July 29th, kicking off at 6:30 p.m. at the exclusive 12-volt bar at the beautiful downtown. It's a happy hour like no other! Live. Get off from work. Kick off your shoes. And enjoy the best of the Margaritaville Downtown Original Fish Fry Fridays. Friday, July 29th.
All party massage.
Admission is $25 and includes one free Bacardi mojito. Or enjoy the Vacation Cafe Buffet with full access to the event for only $55. Tune in to Star 106 for more details. Fish Fry Fridays.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
They call me Pop Cake. I'm in a poor state, yet I stay on guard. I protect the yard. They hardly feed me. Sometimes I'm so thirsty, they say.
Good morning and welcome back to On the Clock with Erin Green. First of all, I want to say thank you to my guest, Sam Duncombe, for being so patient. I wanted to entertain the calls and the texts only because I know that my commentary probably evoked a lot of emotion and response, you know, so I didn't want to leave callers and texters with that energy. I still got just a couple more things I wanted to talk about to mention. I wanted to talk about Justice Winder's appointment to the Chief Justice, but that's really complex. We get into that another day. But I do want to say this since it is in the paper today. I call it the Colby Affair. I'm going to say this again. Don't get trapped playing semantics with lawyers, you know. Lawyers and politicians get paid to play semantics. Oh, no, that's not what politicians get paid for. That's what they end up doing, playing semantics all day. See, because the simplest touch in the right or wrong situation constitutes an assault. The simplest touch. In fact, you don't even have to touch somebody to constitute an assault in law. But before the question of whether the officer was struck arises, we are met with another more important question, or better than that, an easier question to answer. And that is the question of whether the minister defied a direct order from an officer. And not an order given at, on his whim, you know, not his own discretion, but an order passed down to him from his commanding officers. See, that's the question. That's what we need to be focused on. And I don't really usually care about politics like this, you know. I am only concerned because people spending so much money, so much time and energy playing semantics. It's like you pay lawyers big money for this type of semantics. But we have not touched the primary question. Did the minister defy the order of a police officer? See, this is important because some police officers believe you should get beat. You could get beat for that in the road, especially if you're a young black boy. I mean, black. You don't look like you don't have no privilege around you. People have been beaten for less. And that is the question. Did the minister defy an order from the Royal Bahamas Police Force? And I think that that has already been answered in the affirmative. So what's all the hullabaloo about? What's all the hoopla about? Wouldn't it be appropriate for the minister to apologize for defying the police officer's order? Can we not just stop right there? Teaching moment, setting a standard. Can we just do that? Text, I don't think the lights were drones. I think it was a different type of technology. Okay, let's get into our second segment. Good morning, Ms. Duncombe. Ms. Duncombe, maybe it's my headphones.
Morning.
Hi, morning.
Sorry, I was on mute.
No, that's my bad. First of all, I want to say thank you for being so patient this morning.
No worries. I know there's a lot of stuff to be concerned about in this country.
Absolutely. And I also apologize. I didn't even give you a chance to chime in by opening the mic earlier. But it's a bit of something I had to get off my chest. Texter said it seemed like I have had it. Well, I've had 30-plus years of energy crisis and dreams being sold to me, knowing that I cannot achieve those dreams in this place. But most particularly been plagued with a slew of power and internet outages over the weeks. And so there's some frustration there.
Yep, I know. I think most of us are plagued with that on and off.
Yes, yes. And so today, as a part of the independence discussion, I wanted to talk to you about the importance of environmental stewardship, the need to balance national and economic development with environmental and ecological conservation, and to provide an opportunity for us to speak for those parts of the nation that cannot speak for itself.
Well, you know, I've been hearing that word balance for 30 plus years now, that we have to balance the economics and the environment. And the reality is that there is no balance. There's jobs, there's money, and the environment always suffers. And what every single government has failed to understand is that without the environment, we cannot survive. It has nothing to do with hugging trees or loving birds or anything like that. You could love them, you could hate them, it doesn't matter. It's like, can you live without your lungs? Mm-hmm. These are the kinds of things that we're actually doing to the planet that is gonna come back and haunt us in a very, very big way. You know, after COVID, which, you know, many people believe came from this constant slaughtering of and stressing of wildlife. Mm-hmm. So when you stress an animal, any animal, humans as well, your immune system dips. So you're more vulnerable to any kind of bacteria or virus. And so when we continue to go into these wild places and disrupt the ecosystem in those spaces, you're disrupting these animals that carry these diseases, but they're passive when the animal's not stressed. But when the animal is stressed, the viruses are released.
Mm-hmm.
In any event, you know, we came out of COVID and one would have thought that we would have taken that time to really look at where we were as a country in terms of our environmental resources and how we could move forward in a way that was respectful to the environment and to ourselves, because ultimately that's what it's about. If you respect the environment, you understand the environment is part of you. We can't live and breathe without the trees. That's just a reality. It's not Sam's made up facts. Mm-hmm. This is science.
In fact, we can't survive the heat of the planet. Like you can't walk on the ground unless there's grass coverage, and you know, you unless there's trees to cool down the air and cool down the earth. In fact, you can't even plant food in the ground.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so, but what we did instead, you know, and we not only the Bahamas, many countries have taken many wrong terms in terms of how we use the environment, because that's really the only word for it. There is no stewardship. You know, we put up a few national parks and call that stewardship. That's just the tip of the iceberg. There needs to be a broad understanding of why those natural wild places need to exist, not only for the biodiversity that they have in them, but also for us. Mm-hmm. We rushed into one of the worst, or if not the worst tourism products, which is the cruise industry. We have now opened up all of our islands and all of our country to this highly polluting, not only to the air, but to the sea as well. And not only that, it literally destroys cultures.
Mm-hmm.
And we rushed into that. We've got cruise ships going to every island now. And I have to do a big shout out to Spanish Wells that held firm and kept them out of Spanish Wells. You know, I just saw a post recently about Disney, you know, promoting climate change, education, and it's greenwashing, because what you're essentially doing is you're going into a place like Lighthouse Point, which is this beautiful, pristine area, wild area.
Mm-hmm.
You are impacting endangered corals. You're impacting the shoreline. You're bringing a million people to a site that has maybe seen, you know, a couple thousand people over the last couple of years,
mm-hmm.
at most.
Yeah.
So this is the kind of foolishness that we have been sucked into. And when we hear all of these, you know, basically paid hacks talking about how, you know, this is great. You know, these companies are helping us along. No, they're not. They're not. All they're doing is helping their own pocketbook. In just on the outside of it, one cruise ship makes almost $1 billion a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
At Lighthouse Point, we will be getting 30 million over... for 1 year? No. It's absolutely insane the kind of money that these companies make, and that, you know, we essentially will absorb the pollution aspect, the damage to the atmosphere, to our culture.
Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't matter how much money we receive. We generate if we do not have the capacity to implement programs or projects to mitigate the impact of the cruise ships, or if we are unable to, like if the cruise ship is unwilling to moderate its exposure and its presence, so, you know, to the point where we can implement some mitigating programs, it doesn't matter how much money you give us, we just don't have the capacity to put in place what's necessary to protect the environment from your industry.
Precisely. And so this is a big issue now. We've embraced the cruise industry like the dirty, nasty lover that it is. And we are getting all the diseases from it, and they're sailing away with all of the profits, leaving all their trash for us, all, you know, the dumping of sewerage. Remember in the last administration when Carnival was found to have dumped sewage and plastic in our waters?
Yep.
Our environmental law provides for a $30 million fine, which in my opinion is a drop in the bucket. That's the maximum that a company could be fined.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk about a corporation like a cruise ship that is making billions of dollars every year from one ship,
mm-hmm.
and you're basically saying if they come in and dump in our water, sewage, plastic, whatever, bilge,
we'll pay for it.
And the only thing we're going to do is charge you $30 million. And the reality is that when Carl Bethel was attorney general, he said he was going to investigate it. Well, you know, I ain't heard nothing yet.
Oh, boy.
I've heard nothing about any investigation, no outcome of any investigation. Meanwhile, the U.S. courts have it. They have all of the documentation that Carnival was court monitored and was caught dumping sewage, plastic, and bilge water in the Bahamas.
Well, listen, I hear you. Two points I want to make. The first is we all know that if a cash penalty is attached to a crime, that means it's only a crime for poor people, right?
Exactly.
And B, it doesn't matter what the penalty is for dumping if you cannot guarantee that your government is going to enforce the laws, right? Or if you know that they don't have the capacity to enforce the laws. We see recently where BNT was requesting the assistance of the general public in identifying a vehicle and people who had been caught illegally poaching in the park, had been detained, told not to leave, and they left. They were subsequently detained again and released with no real charge.
Well, and I hear you, and I am as outraged as you are about that, because the reality is that tourism runs the show. I don't care what ministry or anything else is involved. When you impact tourists, you need to just shut up and go dead.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And so the tourists can come in, do whatever they want, and essentially walk away from whatever they've done. That set of tourists should have been fined, jailed, whatever the maximum penalty was for mm-hmm. what they took, and made an example of press releases to let boaters know, put it on every dock in the Bahamas. If you are caught doing this in our waters, this is what's going to happen to you. Yep. Instead, what the message we sent was, hey, you're a tourist. You can come in your little pleasure boat, poop in our water, throw your garbage on uninhabited islands, as many do,
mm-hmm.
And rape our waters, and that's okay, because all you can get is a little pat on the butt and be sent out the country. That's what I heard happened to them.
They were
basically fined. Nobody knows what the fine is, or I haven't seen what the fine is, and sent home. No, confiscate their boat.
Yeah, and use the proceeds for the sale of the boat to pay for their jail time.
Exactly. Or pay more wardens at our national parks. Create some kind of enforcement that actually works.
In fact, that's exactly it. Confiscate the boat, turn it in the Sea Park team, and make it a patrol boat. That's it.
Why not?
So, Sam, I got a couple questions before we go. On a scale of complete environment... Oh, sorry, that's the music producer in the background. My bad. Let's go to a break, Sam. And when we come back, I got a couple questions for you. And we're going to go through a couple more texts. So you hold on the clock. And you guys stay tuned to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. We'll be right back.
Hello? Can you show you something else, boy?
Who this is? Tamika?
You don't even remember my name? Wow, Dred.
Girl, I've been so busy. You still planning your trip?
Girl, and I can't wait. I right here online booking my car.
You dare planning trip? You vaccinated?
Girl, we had to. We ain't been nowhere since this pandemic started. Girl, and we got a 14-day vacation.
Best vacation ever.
Girl, are you though?
Well, I know you's gonna get the vaccine because you too like travel. When y'all get your vaccine?
Girl, long time. Because you gotta get your first dose, wait, then get your second dose at least 2 weeks before you travel. Johnny get his vaccine and he 12. Even Grammy get hers. Child, and Grammy say she ain't get no money. But I see her hiding that under the mattress.
Child, let me send my list, because I know you're going shopping. Keisha, don't play with me.
Vaccinate today, late tomorrow. Message by PAHO WHO, Canada, and USAID.
Able to see the storms in life approaching, but we can take the necessary steps to be prepared to ensure the safety of ourselves, our loved ones, and our property. This hurricane season, trust J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers. We'll be here to help you get back on track in your time of need. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com. J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, giving you peace of mind.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news.
Good morning and welcome back to On the Clock with Erin Green and my guest Sam Duncombe. You're on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM and we are filled with questions and texts, but not a lot of time. So here we go, Sam. Here we go. I got a text here that says, kindly ask your guest, how does she expect the Bahamas to support itself with tourism being the number one industry? What does she recommend we replace that stream of income with? Sam?
I wasn't sure if we were finished. What do I expect us to replace it with? Well, first of all, how about some high quality tourists? You know, incentivize behavior.
Now, hold on, Sam, just for a second. Let's not say high-quality tourists. Let's say high-quality tourism products, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Incentivize Bahamians. You know, we're good hosts and hostesses.
Mm-hmm.
Incentivize Bahamians to get more of the actual tourism pie instead of giving it all to these corporations.
Smaller
boutique, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't like Airbnbs, but it's a way that Bahamian could put some money in their pocket that goes directly in their pocket.
Yeah.
And if they want to offer other services like, you know, cooking for them, that could be added on. So, you know, I get it. And maybe those places need to be, I don't know. I have heard some negative comments about Airbnbs, but like I said, I do still think that bottom line, they do offer the average Bahamian who maybe has a room to rent,
mm-hmm.
you know, some cash in the pocket.
I mean, absolutely, Sam. Pulling the tourism product out of the hands of the major multinational corporations.
Exactly.
But it also requires building systems, right? Like Airbnbs will be more sustainable if we have a functioning transportation system. If
right.
we have a taxi system that charges reasonable rates and not just to... and not just servicing tourists coming out of the traditional hotels and tourist spaces.
Yeah, right. it impacts everybody because, you know, let us say somebody is staying at Adelaide, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to go to Avery's once or twice in their stay here. They're going to probably go to other restaurants around the area. And it's really up to us at the end of the day to start creating those ideas that create money for us, selling fruit on the side of the road. And I'm not saying that's the only thing, but I'm just saying we have basically the same way so many people have just handed their health over to doctors and take no responsibility for what they eat, what they drink, what they smoke, anything. We have basically taken our economic viability and handed it over to these corporations mm-hmm. and said, y'all make it work for us.
All right. Well, I agree.
We need to step up to the plate. We need to be creative about the things that we offer or do to make the experience for people who want to visit and actually want to know who Bahamians are. What cruise tourist that hops on a boat and jumps off and walks, you know, half a block on Bay Street? They wouldn't know if they were in the Bahamas, Cancun, apart from the language and maybe not even that. Mm-hmm. You know, they would not have a clue.
I got
where
you.
They were.
I got and you. I absolutely. And so the response to it is we need to be more creative with our tourism product. Absolutely.
I think also if the government incentivized people to do small cottage, one or two bedrooms, one or two cottages, but give them some incentives to do that that isn't going to choke them to death. Help them with, you know, the financing. Help them understand. Just say, here's the money. Go build two cottages. You figure out how to rent it. Like, we need to do this together. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the early 90s, they did these ecotourism workshops that were, I was so full of hope. I was and excited about the possibilities that all of this could be. And, you know, just like everything else, you get hung up on what's the definition going to be instead of, you know, going out and figuring out how do we make or help communities grow and get piece of this pie. And I want to talk very quickly about the BPL situation. And I know that's kind of off this particular topic, but the reality is this. We live in a country that has 350, this is according to the Met Office, our Met Office, 315 days of sun, 9 average hours of sun a day. We have any blackouts. What we should have are solar panels on every warehouse, on every roof that can handle it, solar water heaters on every single house.
But Sam, you know what's been interesting to me in this whole solar and energy crisis / conservation conversation? I haven't heard anything from the insurance industry talking about the impact or the effect of this new solar industry on the products that they offer and the industry itself in this hurricane zone. That's how I know they're not serious about solar.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, think about who imports oil to the country, because that's the major.
Oh, Lord, Sam, I can't think about that right now. I get too excited when I think about that. But listen,
I don't.
I'm all out of time, and if you believe me, the host for Guardian Radio AM, Mr. Cecil Newry, have 4 strong-looking police officers in the production room here to usher me out on time today, because they got plenty to talk. So thank you for joining me this morning, Sam, and we're going to continue this conversation. We're still in the midst of hurricane season, and I'm committed to providing a space for the voices that we do not hear. And we don't ever hear the environment talking to us. I hear the frogs and the mosquitoes, you know, ribbiting and buzzing, getting ready to bite me. But I don't ever hear them talking about what they need, you know? So we got to make a space for that. I also want to say this to the texters. I am so sorry we didn't get to all of these texts. I'm reading them. I am noting them. and I will respond to some of them tomorrow. Some great texts there. I just want to say this to the Ministry of Housing and Transport and the Disaster Recovery Agency. When you take down those domes, I want you to oil them up really well, because I come in to buy those domes for my new camping tourism extravaganza initiative. Don't just sell them to your friends. You know what I'm saying? Don't just throw them in one room to rust away and sell them for scrap. I got a tourism initiative I'm thinking about with them domes. Anyway, thank you so much, Sam.
Thank you, Aaron.
Gonna have you back soon.
Sounds good.
Absolutely. Thank you, Texas. Thank you, callers. And yes, producer, I'm proud to be a Bahamian. I mean, I'm proud to be in this place at the same time as all of these other brilliant people doing brilliant things. Have a great day, Bahamas.
Though we're small in structure.